I would like to ask you, please, to open your New Testaments to Matthew chapter 25. Almost all of what we will be doing this morning will be a walkthrough, a read-through of three stories that Jesus told concerning the judgment in Matthew chapter 25. So it would be great if you were there. As we prepare to get into this study, on the first day of this week, I want to take a moment and tell you a little bit about last week, at least last week from my perspective. As you know, there are two natures to each and every one of us. There is the physical, fleshly nature subject to the corruption of the world, and there is our spiritual, eternal nature that seeks to be revived in the Lord. And I feel like the dichotomy, the gap between the two, was larger last week than I can ever remember. In the flesh, it was a very difficult, painful, sorrowful week. I'm still mourning for two of my best friends who lost their parents to the COVID virus in the last 2 weeks. At this exact moment, there are six friends of mine, people I know personally and dearly, who are in hospital rooms fighting for their lives. The sorrow and pain that their family's experiencing, not being able to see them, almost impossible to describe. Our babies. There's one of our young ones here who is getting treatment for leukemia, recently diagnosed. There are some who have been in the hospital with RSV, little Breck, little baby Breck, in the hospital in Dallas. And add to all of that just the national and worldwide issues. My journal is full every day with names, with situations, and with sorrow. It was a very hard week. And you know, it's a new week this week, and a lot of those pains in the flesh keep going. But what's odd about it is in the spirit, at the exact same time, I think last week may have been the best week of my whole life. We started with Jacob Hudgens here. Jacob, sometimes preachers like peek in on next week's sermon at the beginning to see if they get mentioned. I see you, Jacob. Jacob was amazing. His lessons were awesome and important, and he focused on more gospel and more Jesus. I was in Illinois this week talking about Jacob's lessons, and someone made me a More Jesus t-shirt that I wore to the airport on Friday and had some great conversations come out of it. Like he brought exactly what we needed. And right in the middle of the week, I had a chance to travel to a small town in southern Illinois, didn't know what to expect, and we had three of the most incredible initial relationship days. We studied every night. We met each morning. That church has all of this opportunity to grow. And I just felt so filled up. And then I wake up this morning to start the week. And how did last week end? It ended with this sweet child here. This child in the faith who was baptized into Christ. Kate put on a relationship with Jesus. It's the best. And it's the worst. And that's hard. And so I kind of was thinking last night, like, how do you deal with both of those? How do you deal with the great spiritual promises and highs, and then also these burdens that sometimes get better in the flesh and sometimes don't? And I know what we often say, and this time I like what we often say, and I think we should be saying it more. It's, let's stay focused on heaven. Let's really sing about it and zero in on where we're going. That the flesh will suffer its decay and its troubles, and we'll pray for restoration. But all of the flesh is like grass, and all of it has to die away. But the spirit is being renewed every day. We've got to stay focused on heaven, because let me tell you about heaven. In Revelation, at the end of that letter, we're told that heaven is a place where the burdens of the flesh will no longer exist. No more sorrow, no more sickness, no more sadness, no more tears, no more death. All of the negatives of last week will be gone forever. And in its place, all of the spiritual things that you have in you will blossom into a city filled with light, where there is no need for the sun, because the presence of Jesus will illuminate every soul forever. We need to stay focused on heaven. But today, it occurs to me that between your life today, right here as you sit there and I stand here, here's your life today. Here is you, you're spiritually trying to stay focused in your body, and heaven, between you and that great restoration and release, there are some things in between. Two in particular that I want to talk to you about today. Matthew 25 will be very helpful for this. Between us and the great place called heaven are two things. And here's the first one. The first thing is time. There is time between now and then. In truth, the time could be 5 seconds. Most likely not. Okay, it wasn't. But it could be, because Christ could return at any time. It could be 5 minutes. It could be 5 years. In fact, for some people in this room, it probably is 5 years or less. It could be 50 years, but an expanse of time that you don't even know how much you get is between you today and that great place of eternal light. There is time, and we want to talk about that time. How are you using that time with a view of heaven? And there's one other thing. Are you in Matthew 25? There is time, and then just before we see eternity, there is a moment called the judgment. Between me and heaven is time, I don't know how much, and a moment of judgment where I, 2 Corinthians chapter 5, will actually answer to Jesus for everything I chose to do between now and then. Did you know that? You'll answer for your flesh, for how you lived in the flesh, for how you dealt with all of the junk that is burdening in the flesh. We'll answer for that. And Jesus said that when that time is completed, when you stand before Him, Jesus has said that there will be a judgment, and in that judgment, He will separate the sheep from the goats. Are you in Matthew 25? Look with me in verse 31. When the Son of Man comes, in that judgment, and in many ways you could say the moment you die, you experience this because you're either in paradise or torment, but there will come a final day. The King will say, verse 31, that when the Son of Man comes in His glory and all of the angels with Him, then He will sit on His glorious throne. He is the King. After all the nations will be gathered before Him, and He will separate them from one another as the shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. And He will put the sheep on His right, and He will put the goats on His left. Now, we ultimately learn in verse 46, end of the chapter, is that that moment is coming. And we will answer for our lives. And once that separation is made, eternity commences. Are you ready for that day to come? You know, we talk about the sheep and the goats. By the way, this is a Byzantine era painting from about 500 AD. I thought it was really interesting and used it. What it really triggered for me is, you know, we get into like American life and what it's really about and what we're really here for. I want you to know that for hundreds upon hundreds of years, people knew exactly what they were here for. This is not some new idea. Hey, you know, you may be here to prepare for Jesus. People have known forever to be prepared for Jesus, and they've been painting it and talking about it for a really long time. We talk about the sheep and the goats sometimes and kind of make fun of where you sit in the auditorium. Like, oh, you're on this side. You know, this is where the goats sit, you know, and here's where the sheep are. And then we always make a little joke of, you know, Tim, it's kind of relative. It just depends which way you're facing. You know, if you're facing this way, you guys are good, and this way. Listen to me carefully. When you get through all of the joking, the only person's position that matters is Jesus. It is based on His position that He will call to those on His right to glory, and those on His left will be sent away unto eternal damnation. It is fully His decision, and this represents His position and the sheep and the goats. So here's what we need to do. To the best of our ability, as we are in this room in this moment, we need to find out how ready we are for that moment. Because I want to get there. Everybody wants to get to heaven. Everybody who believes anything about God wants to be at a place. There's no more sickness, no more sorrow, no more death, and just Christ and the tree of life and the river of eternal life. We all want to get there. But are you ready, based on time and the way you're using it, are you ready for that moment? I guess as a preacher, I could make some lists and checklists and boxes. I don't even ever want to do that anymore. Instead, I just want to read. In Matthew 25, Jesus tells us three stories, parables. Each of them, and especially the first two, ask you to consider the way you are using the time between now and that moment, especially these first two. And I know this is a little wordy, but I'm going to leave it up the whole time so that you can read it. In these three stories, he will talk to us about using time between now and judgment to develop kingdom passion, verse 1, kingdom of heaven, and true faith. But kingdom passion and true faith, built, as we said in the class, entirely enraptured in the grace of Christ, will pursue three things. I just want to show them to you. Here's the first one. An identifying mark of someone who is ready to see Jesus is endurance. What does that word mean? It means I am in this for the long haul. I'm not in this short term. I'm not hoping that Jesus catches me on some upward trend because I spend a lot of time away from God and some time with God. I don't need him. I want him to come back in the next 10 minutes, but I don't need him to come back in the next 10 minutes. He can wait 10 more years. I can be subject to the decay of the body and sickness and death, and I will still be faithful. I will never allow my lamp to go empty. That is my part of this. That is an identifying mark of someone who needs it. If you're someone going, Chris, oh, I got you, got you. Here's me, here's heaven, here's time. What I'm going to need is, I'm going to need about this much of it. Because if there's any more than this, and I have to go through one more death, I have to go through one more disappointment, I have to experience one more burden, I'm not going to make it. I have news for you. If you need focus, if you need Jesus to come in this expanse of time, I guarantee you he will wait this long. Say, that's not fair. If Jesus knows I'm barely hanging on by a thread and he needs to get here now, why would he wait? The answer is faith. Faith is all in and as long as it needs to be. Now let me show you the story Jesus told. Verse 1. The kingdom of heaven will be compared to 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. 5 of them were foolish and 5 were prudent. For when the foolish took their lamps, they took no oil with them, but the prudent took oil in flasks along with their lamps. Now, while the bridegroom was delaying, they all got drowsy and began to sleep. But at midnight, there was a shout. Behold the bridegroom, come out to meet him. Then all those virgins rose and trimmed their lamps. The foolish said to the prudent, give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out. But the prudent answered, no, there will not be enough for us and you also. Go instead to the dealers and buy some for yourselves. And while they were going away to make the purchase, the bridegroom came, and those who were ready went in to be with him into the wedding feast, and the door was shut. Later, the other virgins also came saying, Lord, Lord, open up to us. But he said, truly I say to you, I do not know you. Be on the alert then, for you do not know the day nor the hour. Now, the point of this is to be ready, be always ready, and be over prepared. I want to ask you that about your faith. When it comes to the next 5 years or 10 years and all of the things in your future, do you feel barely prepared, adequately prepared, or are you all in, over the top, over prepared? Because that's the difference in this story. All 10 of them wanted to go in. All 10 of them started to head towards the door. All 10 of them had their lamps burning bright. If he came soon, all 10 of them would go in. He did not come soon. There was a longer distance than they were prepared for. And so those who were only in it for a short while, he delayed, and I think on purpose, to make sure that only those who are all in will get in. I believe that about the church. You guys were in class this morning. I love God's grace. I believe God forgives us and sustains us and works with us and does not demand perfection out of us. And there's not a single part of this that screams of perfection, but he is 100% looking for people who are all in with him. You say, well, how do I know if I'm all in or not? If you are preparing yourself for the long journey, if you are sustaining yourself in a way that when there is sorrow or sickness or death, it doesn't completely derail you because you're in it as long as it takes, then you are ready. Go to James chapter 1. We'll be headed back. But go to James 1. I thought about as well Hebrews 12, which says, run the race set before you. How? How do we run the race? Is this a sprint and then we take a break? Is this a, if this is 100 meters, I can make it. If it's 200 meters, I can't? The text says run the race with endurance. We don't know how long it is on purpose. He's just looking for people who keep running and won't quit. In James chapter 1, we learned that, well, I can give you a lot of practical stuff today, and I made a list, you know, about why it is that you should read the Bible every day and why it is you should pray every day and why it is that you should be at worship when God's people are at worship, because we don't want our lamp to get burned down to this amount of oil and then kind of like hope we make it. You know, it's kind of like when you're driving in the car and it's like 50 miles to empty and next town is 40 miles away and you think you'll make it, but you ever notice that that thing starts to like precipitously drop the last 20 miles? If you think you can just barely make it, then the car starts to break down and it's almost like it just starts drinking the gas because you can't just barely make it. Well, let me add something to you with Christ. Not only will the vehicle burn the gas faster, but the distance will keep getting further. Why would God do that to me? Why would he stretch out the journey? Because he's looking for people who don't need it to be today. They'll be ready whenever he's ready. Great song, Mitch. In his time. James 1, it's really about attitude, verse 2. Consider it all joy, my brethren, when you encounter various trials, knowing that it's a testing of my faith. And every time my faith is tested, I don't get closer and closer to quitting. Every time my faith is tested, it produces endurance. And endurance has this perfect result so that we may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. In verse 5, I just pray my way through it, but I never give up. I want to give you three things. Here's the imagery we get from this story. Everybody wanted to get to heaven in this story. All 10 of them. Everybody would have gotten there if he'd have come soon. But the time was the test. And unfortunately, in this case, time was not their friend. Our attitude ought to be thankfulness. For as many days as God needs to give me to make me into what he wants me to be. Second story. It's not just about Matthew 25, this stick with it endurance and over preparation. It is also and always about growth. And I'm really thankful that Jesus followed one story with the next, because I don't want you leaving here going, okay, the main message is just hang in there. If I just hold my ground. Endurance is not just holding your ground. As long as I don't back up, maybe I will make it. I love the fact that he comes in and says, actually, true endurance over time is measured by growth. It's measured by getting better, getting stronger. Look with me at the story and I'll read it for you. I'm going to begin in Matthew chapter 25 and I'll read verses 14 through 28. That's the parable of the talents. Verse 14, he said, it's just like a man about to go on a journey who called his own slaves and entrusted his possessions to them. To one, he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1, each according to his own ability, and he went on a journey. Immediately, the one who had received the 5 talents went and traded with them and gained 5 more talents. In the same manner, the one who had received the 2 talents gained 2 more. But he who received the 1 talent went away and dug a hole in the ground and hid his master's money. Now after, do you see it? A long time. The master of those slaves came and settled accounts with them. The one who had received the 5 talents came up and brought 5 more talents, saying, "Master, you entrusted 5 talents to me. See, I have gained 5 more talents. His master said to him, "Well done, good and faithful slave. You were faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master." Also, the one who had received the 2 talents came up and said, "Master, you entrusted 2 talents to me. See, I have gained 2 more. His master said to him, "Well done, good and faithful slave. You were faithful with a few things, a couple of things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master." And the one also who had received the 1 talent, we're in verse 24, came up and said, "Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you scattered no seed. And I was afraid, and I went away and I hid your talent in the ground. See, you have what is yours." Now I'm going to stop there a moment, because I think this is some Christian's idea of endurance. Endurance means don't lose the talent. Endurance means keeping it close, right there in the ground, and just kind of holding on. Jesus is saying, "I want you to endure until the end. I need you to hold your position, but I also want you to move forward." His master answered, verse 26, you wicked, wicked, lazy slave. You knew that I reap where I did not sow and gather where I scattered no seed. Therefore, you ought to have put my money in the bank, and on my arrival, I would have received my money back with interest. Therefore, take away the talent from him and give it to the one who has 10 talents. For to everyone who has, more shall be given, and he will have an abundance. But from the one who does not have, even what he does have shall be taken away from him. Throw out the worthless slave into the outer darkness. In that place, there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Now, let me work backwards a little bit. Verse 29 says, but from the one who does not have, even what he has will be taken away. This man would say, "I do have something." Don't say that I don't have something, because I do. You gave me a talent and I still have it. You know what the key is in verse 29? The key is growth. For to the one who has produce, I will give him many more things with which to work. But to the one who does not have produce, even what little thing he has will be taken from him. Please, please, don't be a Christian who is just hoping to limp into the judgment day scene. I made it, Lord. I'm battle-worn and scarred, and I've been through so much, and I just made it, and I just barely was able to get here. Look, Jesus is going to bring you. His grace is going to bring you along the way. Our attitude needs to be multiplication for Christ. We want to grow and learn and multiply to him. Look back in verse 16. In our first story, time was a problem. If this goes too long, I won't be able to make it. In our second story, time is awesome. Time is an asset. You're saying, "Look, Lord, maybe there's a long gap between now and me facing you, but I'm so thankful for this time because I can become a better Bible student. I'm really thankful for this time because I may be able to teach the gospel to someone. I'm excited that this may take years because I can help this church change this community." Do you see the thinking? Our thinking switches from, "Oh, Lord, come quickly. I don't think I can make it another day," to, "Lord, give us all the time you want because we're going to do something with it." That's my question for you. If the Lord gives you 10 more years, what are you going to do with it? What are you doing now? I have a microphone. I'm going to walk around and go one at a time. Is that microphone here? Not really. You guys know me too well. I'm not going to do that. What I want to do is just come up to you and go, you know, like, "Josh, like, tell me how you're growing. And if God gives you 5 more years, tell me what you hope to be that is better for him than you are now." I put this in the podcast all the time. Everybody wants to get better. Nobody knows what better looks like. I guess if I'm still going to church 5 years from now, that would be better. That's a guy with dirt under his fingernails. He's got a hole in the ground. We want to be people of progress. Did you see verse 16? You say, "How does that work?" Well, I've got some good news. It's not actually about how much you have. It's not about getting to some level. We talked about that in our grace class. If you produce this much, you get to go in. The guy who went from 5 to 10 got to go in. The guy who went from 2 to 4 got to go in. Even the guy who had 1, if all he had done is turned it into 2, he would have gotten to go in. It's not about amount. It's about effort. I feel like I should say that one more time. It's not about amount. It's not about who's the best. It's not about who does the most. It's about who makes the most out of what you have. Who takes your knowledge and finds a way to learn a little more. Who takes your service and finds a way to serve a little better. It's about progress. And the only way you can get better is if you start verse 16 right now. Here was the difference. The guy with 5 talents immediately... The one who had received the 5 talents went and traded them and gained 5 more talents. What's the secret? It's like investing. You guys want an investment lesson? I don't know when you're going to retire or how long it's going to be or what's going to happen. But what you have today won't be enough 30 years from now. But the earlier you start to grow, the more you can produce. I want to show you 1 Thessalonians for a moment because I'd like to take this to a local church level. I had this really wonderful opportunity to be with the Casey, Illinois church and meet with the elders and the preacher there and study with them and talk about their growth as a group. And what I want you to think about, if you're a member of the Lindale Church of Christ or you're considering becoming a member of the Lindale Church of Christ, we are doing our best to create a culture. And that culture is... We're growing. We're learning. We don't know everything there is to know. We're learning. We're not as evangelistic as we want to be. We're trying to become more evangelistic. We don't know the word like we'd like to know the word, but we're trying to know the word better. We want it to be that if you ever even thought about becoming a member of the Lindale Church, you'd look around and go, you know, if I join that church, just holding what I got won't work. I'm going to have to be learning and becoming more involved and committed. I love the language in 1 Thessalonians and in chapter 4. You guys might recognize it. Excel still more. Come straight from the text. In 1 Thessalonians 4, 1 and 2, this church is doing great. They have tons of great works in their life. But in verse 1, finally then, brethren, we request and exhort you in the Lord Jesus that you receive from us instruction as to how you ought to walk and please God, just as you actually do walk, and that you what? What do? We excel still more. Verse 9, a lot of love in this church. Tons of love, great heart, wonderful emotional investment. Verse 9, nobody can even talk to you about your love of the brethren. It's so great. Verse 10, excel still more. Go back to Matthew 25. Jesus says, I know, or even the Father only knows, how long it will be until you face me. I don't know how much time you have left, but you've got to be in it for the long haul no matter what. And the only way you can truly do that is to keep refilling your lamp and to grow. And we need to do that as a church. And our eldership ought to be leading us in growth, not just holding our own. Jesus said, I have one more story for you. In the first one, time is a burden. In the second one, time is your friend. This time, there's not much reference to time, but there is a reference to getting outside of just oneself and looking around. 3 words I want to leave you with today. Using time between now and judgment to prepare for the Lord involves endurance, improvement, and service. Let's read it together. Matthew chapter 25, I'm going to begin in verse 31 and read through the end of the chapter. Matthew 25, 31, and I'll read through the finale. But when the Son of Man comes, in His glory and all the angels with Him, then He will sit on His glorious throne, and all the nations will be gathered before Him. And He will separate them from one another as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats, and He will put the sheep on His right and the goats on the left. Then the King will say to those on the right, come, you who are blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. That's the literal definition of hospitality, by the way. Love of strangers. I was naked and you clothed me. I was sick and you visited me. I was in prison and you came to me. Then the righteous will answer him saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? And when did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or naked and clothe you? When were you sick or in prison and we came to you? The king will answer and say to them, truly I say to you, to the extent that you did it to one of these brothers of mine, brothers and sisters, family, even the least of them, you did it to me. Then he will say to those on his left, depart from me, accursed ones, into the eternal fire, which has been prepared for the devil and his angels. Now I can see, if I can pause for a moment, I can see someone going, Jesus, you made a mistake here. I'm supposed to be on your right and I'm on your left. Jesus, don't you know that I was baptized? Don't you know that I went to the right church? Do you remember when I lost my grandparents and I hung in there? Do you remember that I did the daily Bible read for 200 straight days? How could you put me on the left? I've tried to use this time for me to prepare myself for you. There's going to be a lot of people over there. Jesus said, listen, I was hungry and you gave me nothing to eat. I was thirsty and you gave me nothing to drink. I was a stranger and you did not invite me in. Naked and you did not clothe me. Sick and in prison and you did not visit me. Then they themselves will answer. And I wonder if Judgment Day will really be like this. Time is not a factor. He'll give you a chance to say, Lord, when did we see that? We never saw you hungry, thirsty. You were never a stranger or naked or sick or in prison. And we did not take care of you. Then he will answer them. Truly I say to you, to the extent that you did not do it to one of the least of these. And by the way, that's kind of like least in your own estimation. Like there's no least, but people look at it that way. You did not do it to me. These will go away into eternal punishment, but the righteous into eternal life. What if Jesus is serious about this? What if he's really telling you exactly how it's going to go? In the judgment, it will be important that we've obeyed the gospel. How can you have the grace of God in your life if you've not obeyed the gospel? If you've not been baptized into the blood of Jesus, how can you have hope? It starts there. And being a part of a church that teaches the truth is part of how we grow. But what if Jesus is saying, this is all I'm going to do in the judgment. I'm going to put you right in front of me and I'm going to say, how did you stick with it when it got hard? How were you using the days I gave you to increase your faith? And when I put people in your life who needed things, when I introduced brothers and sisters in Christ into your life who were hurting, all that fleshly stuff, who were struggling, did you serve them? Did you help them? Do you love them? I don't want to get on to people today. I feel like I have a little merit for it because we were all Gracie in the class and now I get to like bring the hammer. There's no hammer, but judgment is a big deal. And being prepared for judgment is really important because you don't know how long until it's going to happen. I just wonder if there are people who leave church just 2 minutes after the closing prayer and get in their cars and drive to homes where very few, if any, brethren have ever been invited or housed, and all the way there complain about how few people came up and told them how awesome they were. What if Jesus doesn't care about any of that? What if Jesus wants to know about your service? How much did you encourage other people? How long did you stick around to welcome and know your brothers? And how often has your home provided the solution to someone else's problem. I wrote down at the end of this lesson to say, I want to go to heaven. All I want to do is go to heaven. And if perfection, I wrote it right here in all caps, if 100% perfection is required, none of us are going to heaven. We need the mercies of the Lord. But listen to me carefully. God is more interested in direction than he is position. Does that make sense to you? You say, well, I guess I'm not going to heaven then. Because I really got to tell you that I've got hits and misses here, but if you're asking me, you know, whenever he came, on a Tuesday or a Sunday evening, like, will I be? I don't know. No, you know what? Imperfection is a part of this. But Jesus isn't interested in where you are. Jesus is interested in where you're going. What's your direction? How will you use the time that you are given? If it takes a while, will you be ready? If he gives you time to work, will your hands be at the plow? And are you willing to open up and see? I believe this so much more than ever in my life. That the real work is the people. That's the real work. That's where we find Jesus hungry. That's where we find Jesus sad. That's where we find Jesus burdened or thirsty. May we serve one another to the end, because Jesus said, after life there is death, and following that comes the judgment. And I will separate the sheep from the goats, and those who are the sheep I will welcome into that Revelation 22, days that have no darkness, no sorrow, no tears, no death. If you want to get there, let's get there. And let's the mercy of the Lord empower us. If you're not a Christian, become one. If you need encouragement, may the glories and graces of Jesus fully surround you today. And may God's people serve you and help you through. If we can help you, come now as we stand and sing.